How does this extreme feedback model compare to the McLuhan-Ferrara simulation, where the energy and metals go out fairly easily?
They do that on a halo-to-halo basis.
Right.
They show that for some halos they get out easily, but they don't address very properly the question how far they actually get. So they don't do cosmological simulations. So
right.
They just see that they basically break out of the galaxy as well, but they might just go to the zero radius and fall back, and they show that it only works for the smallest halos as well.
So you assume that it gets out of the halo, but then it can't get very far.
Yeah, this is, if you saw that, quite often it just falls back.
Right.
Yeah. I say it's impossible, but I think you really have to tune parameters to get this thing out. It's not that the default is everything flows out easily. The default is it doesn't get out, and you really have to work
hard
to get it out.
Could you put on the transparency where you show the gradient that you needed.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it was an orange line. It's about two-thirds of the way through your tone. Right. And I just wanted to compare that with, Tony Cowan showed that we have this thing back in.
Mm-hmm.
And the orange line there.
I don't say that you don't get the simulation. I showed mixed simulations.
Yeah.
And
this one shows exactly the same slope as the three.
Mm-hmm.
You said you need it.
If you pick the right spectrum, if you pick a soft
we
spectrum.
We have a soft spectrum.
Yeah.
It comes out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to argue against that.
Yeah. So I think this. And that is just a supernova in galaxies to it. So it's this orange line, which is what we computed, and we said that the major effect is the metallicity doesn't change with epoch so much as it changes with density at any given epoch.
You make the comment that at high redshift most of the metals in galaxies, but at low redshift where we can actually see the metals, which is in clusters, most of the metals are not in galaxies. And naively one might have thought at high redshift when the star formation rates were higher, it would be easier to blow the metals out of galaxies than perhaps at lower redshifts. So it seems to me there's something still left to understand here.
It basically depends how large you make that number here. I think we basically have a metal census in the cold gas, and I'm pretty sure about that numbers don't add up to these. So it's basically what you take as a volume filling factor and mass fraction here, how much you want to get out. So I think they're not wildly discrepant, but I think I have already evidence against that from the arguments that Michael made, but they're not that strong yet. I think you have to investigate it further.
Yeah, I think we can agree that most of the metals are not in the absorbers with that table.
Mm-hmm.
However,
they fill now.
They
start to fill a significant fraction
of
the total
okay.
volume.
However, your estimate of 1/10 solar at Z3 for the global metallicity of the universe is probably lower by a factor of at least 3 compared to what we can expect from either the stellar ridges in zero redshift galaxies, or the star formation history that Adelberger has shown yesterday, by Z3 of order of 30% of the stars that we now have at Z0 were already in place, and therefore of order of 30% of the metallicity was already of the metals were already produced by Z3. Now, the Lyman-Black galaxies. I agree with Simon that. Most likely the majority of the gas at that redshift is in a hot phase not yet seen, but still even in the case of the galaxies your estimate is a lower limit because it refers to the metals we can actually see.
Sure.
In Lyman-Bragg galaxy
it's only one galaxy where that's
the core we know that
number.
Yeah.
Uncertain effect of 3, maybe even 10.
That's a lower limit. It's not an uncertainty. It's a lower limit because we know that the core of ellipticals go up several times solar. We have never seen them in formation yet, simply because metallicity is so high that they are in the most obscured part of Lyman-Bragg galaxies.
I don't want to argue that that number could be substantially higher. And to your first part of your question, I think that's a numerical exercise Max Bettini actually did in one of his conference proceedings. So he took a star formation curve and integrated up what you would get taking just Piero's metal production. And if you take that basically from infinity to redshift 2.5, these numbers compare not too badly. So he did that exercise and just affected.
Yeah, but Piero's taking
the star formation.
Piero's yield is too small, in fact.
Yeah. But I think you can easily more easily hide them there than there. I think here we're already quite strongly constrained, and you can do that better. But I think there. That's basically it. If the volume factor gets substantial, then you should just see them as special regions in the Lyman alpha absorber, because basically the volume factor would basically be the fraction of the spectrum taken up by that hot gas. For the Lyman alpha forest, only the volume filling factor matters.
So
you're looking at hydrogen there.
So we'll open up the discussion for everybody from the latter part of the morning session.
I had at least three questions, but possibly more. one was that there seems to be a contradiction between what you're saying and what Tony said, because, in fact, in the partial Lyman limit systems, you can measure all the ionization stages, mm-hmm. and therefore, when she infers the metallicities, unless I misunderstood things, then, in fact, in the partial Lyman limit systems, essentially, you're measuring all the ionization stages, and if there isn't a model dependence in that, in some sense, and the numbers that she was coming up with were in the 10 to the minus 3 to 10 to the minus 2 range, which are somewhat lower than you're inferring from the metal absorption line systems based on the models. And I think if I understood again that the conclusion that the metallicity was relatively flat as a function of column density really was primarily based on that. So there does seem to be some contradiction there, at least between the kind of theoretical models with the underlying ionizing spectrum, right, and the simple interpretation of the thing in a phenomenological
basis. I
think
the argument I make is really quite simple. I think if you plot the power laws of the H1 distribution and the carbon-4 distribution, and that's basically the function of volume filling factor, how much is filled by that gas, that they really track each other very well. So I think that measurement of carbon-4 over H1 being constant over large column density range, if you do it that way, it's very robust and has a large statistical significance because you really take the statistical quantity. So it's a mean that really seems to be constant, and that's really not consistent.
Well, I understand your argument, but the something must be breaking down somewhere, right? Because, I mean, either the ionizing spectrum isn't totally uniform, right, or there's variations in the underlying ionizing spectrum and its spectral characteristics or something like that. And because, in fact, in practicality, this doesn't seem to hold, right?
You could start to argue if you get two partial Lyman limit systems, it's already quite high densities. And then you might see some local flux as well, so that you really have changes in the spectrum there if you go to too high density.
Let me ask my second question, which is, how well do you really think we know omega variant for the Lyman-Bragg galaxies? I mean, you seem to have put it in a very specific value, and I wonder just where exactly that came from.
That's basically the gas that's denser of what that's the gas left in regions denser of what I think make up damped Lyman alpha systems.
This is a theoretical number from
from the numerical simulations. And if you put a lot of feedback in, that number would get smaller. But I think the simulations are resolved, so it's hard to see how it gets much larger. And the distribution that you see there is quite fixed, say at higher densities, because that's basically just a flux decrement distribution. So the outer 70% or so are quite fixed. So you can only play with the inner 30% and change it, basically the density profile of the gases in halos. And I would say that's uncertain at a level of a factor 2, but not more.
Yeah. Let me make my third comment, which was that one thing which occurred to me during these talks was that one argument against a high metallicity in the hot IGM at the present time is in fact that the damp Lyman alpha systems don't show such a very high metallicity, at least down to Z equals 1 or just below 1. I mean, if you have damp Lyman alpha systems with upper limits on the metallicity of about a tenth, mm-hmm. right, is it really very likely that the hot IGM has a metallicity higher than a tenth? And therefore, you might at least have a cap on that.
I didn't put even a number down there. That's the only one where I didn't dare put a number down.
No, but what I was suggesting was that maybe you could at least put an upper limit on that, because it would be rather paradoxical, surely, if the damp climate alpha systems had a lower metallicity than the distributed IGM.
Not necessarily. If you really say it's hot winds that are flowing out late, and that you don't mix into the cold gas at late stages.
Well, I think it's not impossible.
And I think the argument is, now we see a mean metallicity in clusters of 0.3, and that's probably dwarfs that have been disrupted in clusters and put out most of the metals, and that probably should in principle happen in the field as well, and it might be at a lower level, but if that's the mechanism, that shouldn't only happen in clusters. And I think Alvio might like to say, he always argues for high metallicity in the field as well.
Okay. There's one hot medium we find about a tenth or a little below metallicity. It's not higher than most damp climate.
I was just putting this up. This is our results from the Hubble Deep field, which we've arbitrarily divided high Z and low Z, low Z being Z less than 2, high Z greater than 2, and there are some observational biases here, but basically we see far less extinction in the high Z galaxies than we do in the low Z galaxies, and which would be consistent with the change in metallicity indicated there. The extinction for those that is determined for each galaxy, that's independently using the Gaussian law, and simply because we've extended our observations into the infrared, we have factor 5 in the wavelength, so we not only redshift our tendons, we also extinguish our tendons in that match that you're showing there. And in fact, if you note that for some of the high Z galaxies, they're so blue.
I think Sandy had a question as well from stage. Sandy Bender. Sandy wanted to ask another question.
There seemed to be some agreement that the spectrum is softer at high redshift, or likely to be softer at high redshift, implying a contribution from starlight that is substantial. And so I have a comment and a question. The comment is that there is a global constraint, which is that the generation of the metals that you see, which you're trying to distribute, created by the stars that you're forming to create the metals, implies the creation of an ultraviolet radiation background in a fairly one-to-one correspondence. In the earlier generation of simulations that try to put this kind of metallicity production in, or measure the metallicity of the lamina alpha forest, et cetera, there was no attempt to generate the radiation background self-consistently as the metals were being generated, except for Chen and Ostreicher. But so my question is, have you now incorporated into your simulations a self-consistent generation of the radiation background? And if, of course, there's some uncertainty due to how much of it gets out,
I think that's
but there's still a bolometric constraint, which is
some uncertainty. I think that's the main problem. I think the escape fraction is very well.
But now that we have an infrared background,
it's hardly impossible to calculate theoretically.
But now that we have an infrared background as well, there's some bolometric constraint which you can apply.
I think the bolometric constraint.
Still would get a great softening of the spectrum at high redshift. And that's just because of the absorption being much higher than. So independent of the nature of the sources, with the spectrum, the source function can be softer or harder, but the mean intensity is much softer at high redshift, no matter what the unit of the process.
I know.
That the spectrum was stellar in its origin, not assuming that this was proof that it was stellar. You're arguing it doesn't have to be stellar.
To answer your first question, volumetrically there's no problem whatsoever if photons escape. If no photons escape, obviously you can't do it, but volumetrically you produce enough energy to get the photons to do it.
If no photons escape, then you don't explain the radiation.
Yeah, you could, in principle you could argue the escape from quasars but not from galaxies. I think nobody has seen an ionizing photon escaping from a high redshift galaxy yet. So as of the change in spectrum, I think we don't have no indications that there's actually ionizing radiation coming out of galaxies. In principle, I agree, but I think if you do helium, then you have to get the helium opacity in detail, and then if you look in different ionizing ratios of different ions, you can still tell the difference. So there's still a difference between a soft spectrum that's because it's absorbed at 4 Rydberg and a stellar spectrum. And the one plot I showed from Alec Boxenberg, so he basically showed that you can do the special ratios of silicon 4 over carbon 4 against carbon 2 over carbon 4. You can do with a spectrum of a star that has a temperature of 50,000 K, but you can't do it with just the 4 Rydberg break. So he doesn't get that ratios right.
What confusing two things. One is the input factor, the source, and the other is the mean intensity.
Yeah, that's just what I mean. The effect of the helium opacity is that you have a 4 Rydberg break. But the spectrum, it really matters then how the spectrum looks in detail. So soft is not equal to soft in that sense.
Let me bring back the issue to metal enrichment. There's very convincing evidence from the intercluster medium, especially in the low temperature clusters, that the entropy of the medium is actually much higher than you get just through gravitational collapse. And if it's true that most of the variance in the universe today are in the intercluster medium of low temperature clusters or poor groups, then that means that there's something really dramatic has happened. It is true also that most of the metals are in galaxies of redshift 3, and today they are in this intercluster medium of groups, or intergroup medium, let's call it that way. Then it's been pulled out between redshift 3 and redshift 0.
Yeah,
and has input a lot of energy as well.
The question again, if the temperature is just rising in regions where you later form clusters and groups, or if that's globally, and that's the reason I put here cold or hot IGM, basically because we don't know if that globally happens. So you could have a globally hot IGM that is at a temperature of 5K, but it could be as cold as 3,000K if there would be no energy input in the average region. And I think that observation, we just don't know that yet. And from the simulations that Jerry will show, he would argue you have a hot IGM everywhere that's enriched everywhere and has a temperature that goes from 10 to 5 to 10 to 6K in low density regions and goes up to 10 to 7, 10 to 8K in clusters.
But I guess the question is, I mean, if the metals are going from the galaxies to the intergroup medium between redshift 3 and 0, then there's a prediction that if you go and you're able to do this the same game at intermediate redshifts, you should see this the effects of these winds blowing out of galaxies much more easily.
You should see this number increasing from that to that and the volume factor as well, if you want to do that. But it's just the Lyman alpha force, you can only look up down to redshift 2 or so, and at redshift below 2, basically the density is so low that it gets so highly ionized that you don't see the force basically dies out. That's the reason so hard to do that in the optical and with the X-ray. As you know, it's rather difficult as well.
Okay, on that note, I think that we have to wrap it up so that we can have lunch.